Today is Wednesday, May 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Belarusian opposition claimed that a new video shows arrested journalist Roman Protasevich has been beaten in prison.
There is no doubt that he may be tortured.
Plus, aid agencies are assessing the need for tens of thousands of people affected by a volcanic eruption in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
The Red Cross is leading an effort to reunite several hundred children who have been separated from their families.
We'll have these stories and more next. The opposition in Belarus says it is clear Roman Protasevich, the journalist who was arrested on Sunday after his flight was forced to land in Minsk, has been beaten in detention. They point to an online video they and others allege was made under duress. Some Western leaders have described the landing as a state-sponsored hijacking, and many European airlines are avoiding Belarusian airspace. Henry Ridgewell starts us off.
In a video posted online Monday, Roman Protasevich confessed to organizing mass protests. His supporters, including exiled opposition leader Svetlana Tsikhanouskaya, say it was a forced confession.
He said that he's being treated lawfully, but he's clearly beaten and under pressure. There is no doubt that he may be tortured.
The U.S.-based Committee to Protect Journalists, which has called for his immediate release, says it is not able to verify the time or circumstances under which the video was recorded. The 26-year-old Protasevich was detained Sunday after the Ryanair passenger jet he was traveling on was forced to land in Belarus as it flew over its airspace. The plane was en route to Lithuania from Greece. Belarusian authorities claimed, without providing evidence, that there was a bomb threat and sent a fighter jet to intercept the plane. Protasevich and a Russian friend, Sofia Sapega, were arrested on arrival. Three other passengers also disembarked in Minsk. They are believed to be Belarusian security agents who were tracking Protasevich. Browder is a financier and political activist who has campaigned for sanctions against human rights abusers in Russia and elsewhere.
I think it sends a horrific message to every enemy of every dictatorship around the world that you can literally be plucked out of the sky no matter where you are.
European Union leaders expressed outrage following a summit in Brussels Monday. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
This is an attack on freedom of expression, and this is an attack on European sovereignty. And this outrageous behavior needs a strong answer. Therefore, the European Council decided that there will be additional sanctions on individuals that are involved in the hijacking, but this time also on businesses and economic entities that are financing this regime.
NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg echoed the condemnation.
This is a state hijacking and demonstrates how the regime in Minsk attacks basic democratic rights.
Belarusian officials deny forcing the plane to divert. The European Union urged airlines to reroute around Belarus, and Belarusian airlines will also be banned from EU airspace. Alex Titov is a Belarus analyst at Queen's University Belfast.
Ultimately, that's not going to move Lukashenko because he's got his man now. European Union in particular, but in the United States as well, don't really want to completely antagonize Belarus or lose it altogether and push it into Moscow's arms.
Protasevich fled to Poland in 2019 and claimed political asylum. He ran the popular Nexta and Nexta live channels on the social media site Telegram. Since the protest began in August after a disputed election, Belarusian authorities have arrested an estimated 35,000 people. There is widespread evidence of torture. Again, Alex Titov.
Well, the Telegram channel by kind of two very young journalists in Poland, in exile in Poland already, suddenly became that kind of linchpin. Seemingly, which was directing all the protests.
U.S. President Joe Biden has asked his advisers to come up with options so those responsible for the incident can be held to account. The United Nations has also called for a full, transparent and independent investigation. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The United Nations Security Council will meet behind closed doors on Wednesday to discuss the matter. Diplomats confirmed to VOA that Estonia, France, and Ireland requested the meeting. Airlines rerouted flights to avoid Belarusian airspace on Tuesday, and Belarusian airplanes may face possible bans from Europe. Lufthansa, KLM, SAS, Air France, LOT, and Singapore Airlines were among the carriers that stopped flying over Belarus. U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin will hold a summit next month in Geneva. It will be the first face-to-face meeting between the two leaders and comes at a time when the two countries are at odds on several contentious issues. The White House has confirmed details of the June 16th meeting with Putin on Tuesday, and officials say Biden would add the meeting to his first international trip as president when he visits Britain for a meeting with the Group of Seven leaders and Brussels for a NATO summit. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says that he and Putin will discuss the full range of pressing issues as they seek to restore predictability and stability to the U.S.-Russia relationship. The European Union has pledged to deliver at least 100 million COVID-19 vaccine doses to low- and middle-income countries by year's end and develop vaccine production capacity in poor nations as it wrapped up a two-day summit in Brussels. Lisa Bryant has the details.
After being criticized for a slow vaccination start, European leaders say they are steaming ahead on COVID-19 inoculations, securing 1.8 billion doses to cover the next 2 years, enough to export to needy countries outside the 27-member bloc. The bloc says it's also on track to surpass goals of exporting 100 million doses to developing countries. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
We are working on an initiative to invest 1 billion euro from Team Europe to develop vaccine manufacturing in Africa, the capacity itself in Africa. It's a specific initiative with our African partners, an initiative not only for the production, so to build up the manufacturing capacities, but also for skilled development, for the management of the supply chain, or, for example, the necessary regulatory framework through the African Medicines Agency.
In Europe, where many countries are emerging from lockdowns and hospitalizations are dropping, von der Leyen said the EU is on track to inoculate 70% of its adults by July's end. Europe's Medicines Agency is now considering whether to approve Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines for 12 to 15-year-olds. Meanwhile, special COVID-19 digital travel passes aim to open up summer travel for EU citizens who are either vaccinated, immune from having contracted the virus, or tested negative to it. Together, says analyst Scott Marcus, a senior fellow at the Brussels-based Bruegel Economic Research Group, the developments are shaping a more favorable tourism outlook for Europe.
I think that things are looking more promising. I still think that late summer looked better than early summer, but I think we're on track to have a summer at least as good as last summer and probably better.
Member states also discuss the thorny issue of national emissions targets to meet the bloc's overall goal of reducing greenhouse gases by 55% by 2030 and becoming climate neutral by 2050. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. As it looks to shore up the Middle East ceasefire, the United States is vowing to help Palestinians rebuild Gaza after it was heavily damaged by Israeli airstrikes. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has this update on U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's trip to the region.
First in Jerusalem and then in the West Bank, Secretary of State Antony Blinken pledged the U.S. will help support Palestinians, not only through aid, but by restoring ties.
The United States will be moving forward with the process to reopen our consulate in Jerusalem.
The office had been in charge of diplomatic relations with Palestinians, but Donald Trump infuriated them by downgrading its operations. Blinken told Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu that they both must use the ceasefire to address underlying challenges to peace. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The U.S. military estimates that it has completed up to a quarter of its pullout from Afghanistan. The withdrawal of the U.S.-led NATO force has sparked fears that Afghanistan's civil war could intensify and spiral out of control. Earlier today, I spoke with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb to get the U.S. military's assessment after U.S. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell urged President Joe Biden on Tuesday to reconsider the decision to withdraw.
Well, Steve, the U.S. military is now estimating that it has completed up to a quarter of its pullout from Afghanistan. I'm saying up to a quarter because the military has been giving us ranges of their estimates because they don't want to tell the enemy exactly how much they have pulled out at any given time. But U.S. Central Command, that's the group that oversees all of the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, the fight in Syria as well. They came out with the estimate and they said that the U.S. has completed between 16% and 25% of their retrograde process, which is their way of saying the pullout. They gave us some more details about the equipment that's been removed. They also said that they've turned over about 10,000 pieces of equipment to the Defense Logistics Agency for disposition.
Did they give any information about how the U.S. military and perhaps NATO may continue to support the Afghan troops in the region after the withdrawal? Because there's been some questions as to how they're going to do the cross-border support.
So that is still to be determined, and it's still very tricky. The commander of U.S. Central Command, General Frank McKenzie, has told lawmakers and reporters that there's going to be some sort of over-the-horizon training and support. Now, over-the-horizon is the military's way of saying that they're going to be based in other countries, possibly, you know, Qatar, possibly UAE, possibly being based out in the Arabian Sea, and they will send in the reinforcement and the supplies that they need to have the oversight, the flight, the drones, everything necessary from afar. Now, it gets a little bit complicated with training because they haven't said exactly how they're going to train. They've just said that U.S. troops are going to be out of Afghanistan. The one thing that has been criticized severely by experts is the lack of support for the Afghan Air Force, because right now there's not a plan in place on how the U.S. is going to replace the contractors. The Afghan government, the Afghan military relies heavily on U.S. contractors to repair its aircraft and maintain its aircraft. So once those contractors pull out with the U.S. military, it's a little unclear how that maintenance is going to be kept up.
Now, speaking of criticism, U.S. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on Tuesday urged President Biden to reconsider the decision to withdraw, even though former Republican President Donald Trump is the one who made the agreement with the Taliban. Has the Pentagon responded in any way to the criticism about the U.S. troop withdrawal in general?
So I actually asked Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby about that criticism today during our briefing, and he said he pointed out that the enemy that Mitch McConnell is talking about, the enemy that may retake the high ground, as Mitch McConnell was trying to put it, that enemy is actually al-Qaeda, and that enemy, John Kirby says, has been diminished, not extinguished, he made very clear, but diminished. And that is why the U.S. feels that it is time now to pull out, because according to the president's thoughts, once bin Laden was taken out in May of 2011, that was the leadership that had fallen. And then in Afghanistan, al-Qaeda has gotten more and more diminished, according to the president's view. And as long as the Taliban does not support al-Qaeda in order to allow it to regroup and to have a safe haven to launch attacks against the United States, in the president's opinion, doesn't need to be in Afghanistan to continue its counterterror war.
Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. Talks between Iran and the world powers still adhering to the 2015 nuclear deal resumed on Tuesday in Vienna with the goal of bringing the United States back into the deal. The fifth round of talks began a day after Iran and the United Nations International Atomic Energy Agency agreed to extend a deal for monitoring Iran's nuclear activities for 1 month. While the United States is not directly participating in the talks, the U.S. Special Envoy for Iran, Rob Maley, has been in Vienna for previous rounds and is in touch with the representatives from the participants, Germany, France, Britain, Russia, and China. After a Tuesday meeting of the Joint Commission on the Plan of Action, the Russian delegate, Mikhail Ulyanov, said that a resolution was visible and that these are probably the final round of talks in Vienna. Aid agencies are assessing the need of tens of thousands of people affected by the eruption of the Mount Nyiragongo volcano in the city of Goma inside the Democratic Republic of Congo. Lisa Schlein is up next.
Local authorities report 32 people were killed in the eruption, including 7 by lava and 5 others who are asphyxiated by gases. The UN Refugee Agency reports most of the thousands who fled on foot Saturday as lava flowed down on their towns have returned home. Their return is fraught with anxiety and uncertainty, as the full impact of the eruption is not yet known. However, UNHCR spokesman Boris Cheshakov says the damage is likely to be extensive. He says that assessment is based on preliminary findings of an evaluation mission by aid agencies and the DRC government Sunday.
From the air, the eruption's path south of the volcano is clear. 2 villages on Goma's northern tip were destroyed, and 2 others were almost completely covered by lava. Our staff have heard testimonies from families who lost their homes and from others who lost children and other loved ones. Entire neighborhoods have been left without electricity and their fears of water shortages.
Mount Nyiragongo is one of the world's most active and dangerous volcanoes. It last erupted in 2002, killing 250 people and making more than 100,000 homeless. The lava flow from this present eruption stopped Sunday and has been followed by repeated earthquakes, prompting fears of new fissures opening up or another eruption. Cheshakov says agencies are rushing to help people displaced by this disaster. He says the Red Cross is leading an effort to reunite several hundred children who have been separated from their families. He says the UNHCR and partners are preparing to assist those in need of shelter and other humanitarian relief. However, he adds the operation is likely to run into difficulty because of blocked access roads.
The road leading to northern parts of North Kivu province is also damaged by lava, which will hamper the transport of food and goods to the area around Beni, where some 280,000 people displaced by conflict and insecurity since January 2021 rely on humanitarian aid.
Cheshakov says other access routes are cut off by closed borders since the coronavirus pandemic began. He says another problem hampering the aid effort is the lack of money. He notes the UNHCR has received only 17% of the more than $200 million it needs for its operations in DRC this year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Mali's National Committee for Human Rights has joined calls for the release of Interim President Balan Dao and Prime Minister Mokhtar Ouane, who the military detained on Monday night in an apparent coup, the second in less than a year. Annie Rosenberg has more.
Mali's transitional president and prime minister, who were installed after a coup d'etat ousted former president Ibrahim Boubacar Keita in August of 2020, remained in detention Tuesday in Kati, a military town outside of Bamako. President Ba Diaw and Prime Minister Mokhtar Ouane were arrested in the capital Monday night. The arrests, spearheaded by Assimi Goïta, the vice president of the transition, followed the naming of a new cabinet. Baba Cisse, special advisor to Goïta, addressed the arrest Tuesday morning on Mali's national television station, ORTM, via Reuters. In the broadcast, Cisse said the new ministers were appointed without consulting Goïta, which he says is a violation of the transition charter. Bamako remains calm, and Cisse called on citizens to continue their daily activities. The vice president of the transition invites the population to continue freely in their occupations, he says, and assures them of the unswerving engagement of security and defense forces to preserve the interests of the Malian people. This morning, activists gathered at the Bourse du Travail before being asked to disperse by police. They gathered to denounce the arrest of the president and prime minister. Borotumu Cisse, a young activist, came out to voice her discontent at Mali's continued instability. Why are they doing this, she says. Either it's for personal reasons, it's not for the Malian people, and that we cannot accept. So this morning we are here to show our discontent, and we will go until the end. Mali's National Committee for Human Rights, a governmental organization, has called for the release of Diaw and Wan. The committee's president, Bouary Aguibou, explained via a messaging app from Bamako why they felt it was important to make this call. He says, this constitutes a detention and an arrest that is illegal. Illegal for the simple reason that it was not made in the framework of the law. He says, we have also learned that they are still in detention in Kati, which means they are in arbitrary detention. That is what brought us to publish this letter. The attempted coup comes during an ongoing general strike. Bokar Sangare, a Malian journalist in Bamako, spoke via a messaging application about the implications of more instability in a country that is already struggling on several fronts. We know that insecurity is going further south, he says, all the way to the Sikasso region, where the jihadists are installing themselves. So where we are in this country, this situation, in fact, risks to disturb a lot of people. It is unclear whether this attempted coup will delay the 2022 elections. The future remains uncertain for Mali. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of Japanese astronomers has discovered the oldest spiral galaxy to be observed. The astronomers found the ancient galaxy with data gathered by the Atacama Large Millimeter Array, or ALMA, radio telescope in Chile. The galaxy was observed as it existed 12.4 billion years ago, or 1.4 billion years after the Big Bang, when it was in an early stage of formation. The astronomers said that starlight from the galaxy was masked since it was so full of dust, which makes it difficult to observe in visible light. Findings of the discovery are detailed in a study published by the journal Science. According to the study, the spiral arms of the galaxy extend some 15,000 light years from its center, and its total mass is about equal to that of the Milky Way. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The announcement recently of new coordinated sanctions against Myanmar's military rulers by a handful of Western governments has been welcomed by the United Nations independent expert monitoring the human rights situation in the country. UN Special Rapporteur Tom Andrews is urging all countries to follow the path that has been taken by the United States, Britain, and Canada. VOA Asia's Ira Melman asked Andrews, what is it about these sanctions he believes have made progress toward a return to Myanmar's civilian government?
Well, two aspects were very important. The first is that the United States, at least, took a major step forward by designating not just individual industries or individuals, but also the junta itself, the State Administrative Council, for sanctions. So that is a step forward. The second point is that these three countries, as you noted, the UK, Canada, and the United States, announced this in a coordinated fashion. It is critical, I believe, that sanctions be coordinated among those countries, all countries, who want to stand with the people of Myanmar, and that the strongest possible sanctions be incorporated into that sanctions regime. What is very important is that those countries who want to pressure the junta do so in a coordinated way so that together, linked together, those sanctions will deliver the strongest possible punch against the junta. So that is exactly what I think needs to happen. The ideal way to do that is through the United Nations Security Council. I do not see that being a viable option, at least in the short run. And so if in fact the Security Council cannot act or will not act, it makes it imperative that those countries who do want to act do so in a coordinated, focused, tough fashion. And that will give us a foundation on which we can encourage all countries, to stand with the people of Myanmar and exert the kind of pressure that I think is necessary to exert right now, given the crisis in that country.
Why has this been so difficult?
Well, you know, first of all, this is just a nightmare inside of Myanmar. There are most people, myself included, did not believe that this was going to happen. The military had such extraordinary power and autonomy within the constitution that they wrote that they turned out to violate in their overthrowing of the government. In other words, they set up rules designed to give them maximum power, and then they decided it wasn't enough, and they overturned even their own rules. So this has been, first of all, a surprise for many when it happened on February 1st. And then it has been a disaster upon disaster upon disaster ever since. I think it's just so important for countries around the world to keep their focus on what's going on in Myanmar. I think that the worst thing that could happen right now is for attention to be diverted away. Time is not on the side of those of us who want to see an end to this nightmare. We need to focus attention, we need to focus action, and we need to do it now. And one of the issues that is, of course, so disturbing that as we watch developments unfold in Myanmar, is not only the systematic brutality of the Myanmar military, the steady rise in those who have been assassinated, murdered by the regime, the steady rise of those who have been detained, the journalists that have been detained, the efforts that the junta is making to prevent the truth from getting out. In addition to that, we're seeing increasingly people so desperate to defend themselves that they are taking up weapons, crude weapons. But they feel that in light of what they perceive as inaction by the international community, their only recourse is to take up arms. I think that is very, very troubling, deeply troubling. I think it should trouble everyone.
Tom Andrews is the UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in Myanmar, and he was speaking to VOA Asia's Ira Melman. The Myanmar junta says that it needed to take control after what it alleged was widespread election fraud in November of 2020. However, it has yet to provide its findings to be independently verified. American Danny Fenster, the managing editor of the Frontier Myanmar, was detained on Monday as he attempted to take a flight out of the country. Fenster is the fourth foreign journalist being held since the coup in February. Tens of thousands of people in India have been evacuated from low-lying areas and moved to cyclone shelters to escape a powerful storm barreling toward the eastern coast. AP correspondent Charles Deledesma reports.
The Indian Meteorological Department says Cyclone Yaus is set to turn into a very severe cyclonic storm with sustained wind speeds of up to 110 miles per hour. The cyclone is expected to make landfall early Wednesday in two states. Thousands of emergency personnel have been deployed in coastal regions to aid evacuation and any possible rescue operations. India's Air Force and Navy are also on standby to carry out relief work. I'm Charles Deledesma.
Moderna says its COVID-19 vaccine has been found to be effective in adolescents aged 12 to 17 and showed no new or major safety problems in a clinical trial. That's potentially setting the stage for a second vaccine for school-aged children to be authorized in July. Reuters' Freddie Joyner has more.
Vaccine makers are racing to get approval for their COVID-19 shots in younger and younger people. And on Tuesday, Moderna announced it would be the second firm to seek clearance to use their vaccine in school-aged children in the U.S. A clinical trial showed Moderna's shot was effective in adolescents aged 12 to 17. With no new or major safety problems. The Moderna vaccine, already authorized for adults aged 18 and up, will now go to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, which could grant emergency use authorization as soon as July. It took U.S. regulators about a month to review and approve the Pfizer-BioNTech shot for ages 12 to 15. Moderna's trial studied 3,732 adolescents aged 12 to 17. Two-thirds got the vaccine, and one-third got a placebo. 2 weeks after the second dose, researchers found no cases of COVID-19 in the vaccine group and 4 cases in the placebo group. Children rarely develop COVID-19 symptoms, but they remain at risk of falling seriously ill and can still transmit the virus. Moderna is currently testing its vaccine in children as young as 6 months of age.
Freddie Joyner from Reuters. And this has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great day.